Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Georgetown University did research published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology that shows that resveratrol, that's what you get when you eat grapes, helps protect from Alzheimer's. Now this is a big deal because what it does at high doses, resveratrol can impact a biomarker of Alzheimer's. Researchers from Georgetown University enrolled 119 patients with mild to moderate Alzheimer's in a one-year supplementation of either synthetic resveratrol supplement or placebo. And they were given from 500 to 2,000 milligrams over the course of the experimental period. After a year, the resveratrol group exhibited little to no change in levels of amyloid beta 40 in the blood and cerebrospinal fluids. Meanwhile, the placebo group had lower levels of amyloid B40 compared to their baseline levels. So that meant that resveratrol made a difference, a substantial difference. One study published in the journal Experimental Gerontology administered either a freeze-dried grape powder or a placebo powder to participants with mild cognitive decline. Those who received the grape powder, which would have resveratrol in it, had higher metabolic activity in certain areas of the brain, preserving healthy brain activity, allowing the brain to be healthy longer. The study was important because it just shows us the importance of all this. And then another study published in the Nature Journal looked at the effects of different doses of alcohol in mice. And they found that even low dose of alcohol displayed an increase in fluid flow through the brains, and this can be very important because you don't want alcohol at any level in your body. You don't want to have toxins carried throughout the body because it can damage a lot of cells. A million brain cells, a million heart cells, a million liver cells could be destroyed with one single drink of regular alcohol. I'm not talking about 2% beer or homemade wine. This is nothing more than really a fermentation. So that's what we're up to. We have a lot more on health and healing coming at you, but also today I'm going to do a commentary. This commentary is going to be based upon what we're going to hear from Professor Brett Weinstein, who was also a part of yesterday's program. But today's different in that I'm going to be interceding throughout what he says and sharing a commentary on what I see as the biggest problems that we face and not dealing with any of them. Now, we're dealing with problems, but in a level of priority, if someone's been hit by a car and they're hemorrhaging and you've got to get them into an emergency room, you don't want to take that time to have a debate on something that's less important than saving their lives. Right now, we need to prioritize saving the planet, saving ourselves from the corruption that could devastate all of us that's been going on for decades. And then we can deal with all the other issues that we have. Also, the human cost of wokeness. And one of the reasons why you don't hear this one scientist, his PhD, because he found out who patented the coronavirus. And why that's important, we understand this. Also, my guest on Tuesday evening's show, professor from New York University, Crispin Miller, one student who heard him talk about why the science was not there to support preventing COVID virus transmission from wearing masks, wanted him fired immediately. Now, of course, there'll be a whole orchestration of that, and he's a tenured professor, but he, in all likelihood, will be fired. I hope not, but that's what's happening all over the country. So we decided to actually get you the actual science, something I can promise you that young student didn't do. Didn't look at all the scientific material and see, okay, we have studies that support masks and studies that don't. And then see which are the best designed studies and what are the results. Then make our decision based upon good science. We will do that for you. That's what we have coming up, and Richard Gale, our scholar in residence, will be here to give some input. Also, some people evidently appreciated some of the statements I was making about how we are lied to regularly, and yet we're continuing to believe people who lie to us. And one of the ways we can determine if someone's lying, and lying on a regular basis about important things, is, are they sacrificing anything? Are they selfless? Are they in real service for the greater good of humanity? And almost always, they never are. They pretend to be. They'll mouth, like Obama, statements that make us feel good about his intents, at the same time picking up a Nobel Prize for Peace, like Martin Luther King. He, like Henry Kissinger, who also got a Nobel Prize for Peace, starts wars, causes pain, inflicts enormous suffering. How do we end up with a cognitive disconnect that we can't judge a person based upon the reality of what they actually do rather than just what they say? So I'm going to share some additional insights into how we can take a journey into selflessness and service for the larger good. That's our program. Now we'll go back to the latest on health and healing. And by the way, I've gotten a lot of people asking, when are we going to have the results of the anti-aging clinical studies? And it'll be in the very near future. It's coming. In fact, we're just compiling the last of the data, doing the last of the interviews, and then we'll get to it. We have an awful lot to do in the interim. And in that respect, I just want to go over some things right now, instead of quoting a lot more studies, that will help us. There are some nutrients that will help people who are having certain blood problems. For example, if you have a blood sugar problem, then get yourself onto any of the triple action blood pressure supplements that will help lower it. Now, if you're eating garlic, that will help. Onions will help. Shallots will help lower your blood pressure. Using lemon juice and lime juice instead of salt. If you're going to use salt, use Himalayan sea salt rather than white table salt. Also, if you're fatigued a lot, maybe you're fatigued because you're just getting older and you haven't exercised, or maybe you have chronic fatigue, maybe Lyme's disease, then look at the nutrient PQQ, because it energizes to an optimal level our mitochondria. In fact, it creates new mitochondria. So even if you're older, and older means over the age of 30, because old age actually sets in officially at around 27 years of age. So from 30 up, you're aging, and you're losing your mitochondria, your energy factories that give you the power to excel physically. So by giving yourself PQQ, 20 milligrams a day, you can build new mitochondria. Also, if you need additional support, let's say you're really suffering from some problems, and your adrenals are shot, maybe your heart muscle is weak, D-ribose, R-I-B-O-S-E, that can help. Also, you want some good adaptogens in your blood. Adaptogens are nutrients like ginseng that's really good for you. It can help with all the different systems in the body. But so too can rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, extract, and ashwagandha. Very good ashwagandha for anxiety, by the way. I recommend people who are having anxiety attacks, and it really helps. A-S-H-W-A-G-A-N-D-H-A, ashwagandha. And then if you want to relieve some, let's say some acute anxiety, one of the best is magnesium at about 1,000 milligrams. Choline and inositol at about 1,000 milligrams. Also works well. For those of you who can't get a good night's sleep, I would suggest, if you're suffering with anxiety, and that's why you're not getting your sleep, GABA. Gamma-aminobutyric acid, G-A-B-A, GABA. It's really good, especially for those of you who might have what we call a type A personality, more dynamic energy. You're always thinking, you're always doing, you're always active. It's hard for you to rest and take a break. Well, GABA can help with that. It's a great way of enhancing stress relief. For those of you who want to improve your mood, probiotics work to help relieve stress. Also, make sure you're getting your chromium each day, about 200 micrograms. That'll support your glucose. And also to help you with better collagen, and that keeps your skin tight and healthy. Once a year, I go to get a complete skin evaluation, and I've done this for years, decades, because when I was younger, and I'd be working out all day and working out on the ranch, and you generally, if you're on a farm or a ranch, there are different types of work. A ranch is generally, it's large areas of land and animals, whatever the animal is that you're raising, or a farm where you're growing stuff, what we call a truck farm, meaning you're growing things, putting them on a truck and taking them to market. They both require a lot of work. I mean, you don't get days off when you're responsible for being on a farm. Hardest working people I ever met in my life are those who get up like the farmers. I have an enormous respect for farmers and ranchers. I don't believe in ranching animals for meat. A lot of people don't. A lot of people have animals that they live their whole life in beautiful pastures so the person can get a agri tax exemption, lowers their taxes substantially. In fact, one of the roads that I take people up is nothing but agri farms and ranches. So you see this kind of bucolic scene where you have beautiful animals, goats and sheep and horses and cows of all different breeds, and they'll come right over the fence, and you can feed them grass. They're just happy creatures. They're not going to end up on anyone's dinner table. So the key was, when you're outside in the sun and it's hot, and I lived in Texas for 8 years, back in the late 80s and 90s, you're out there working out, you got just shorts on, just your gym shorts, you're going to end up getting a lot of sun. Even if you take a lot of vitamin C and quercetin, you still get a lot of sun. No bad burning, but it's not good for you. Too much. Some sunlight absolutely needed every day. About 1 hour of sunlight over half your body will give you the vitamin D you need to keep your immune system strong and healthy and protect your skin also. A lot of people don't get even that. And when they do go out in the sun, they cover up so much or they put so much sunblock on, they're not getting their vitamin D. In any case, later in life, you'll start to see little lesions of different types. And if you scratch them off 2 or 3 days later, they come back. And these are all considered precancerous, but they're not going to run into cancer. Squamous cell is generally the most common one. It's not melanoma, it's not your deadly one. Or basal cell, which is also serious. So everyone should have your hands, your neck, your face tested. And the dermatologist this morning, because I got it done early this morning, he said, "Do you use Botox?" I said, "Nope." "Why not?" "Well, first of all, it's a toxicant. It's putting a active bacterium in your body. Now, your skin isn't the wrinkle part. The musculature underneath is, and the connective collagen. So when it paralyzes that, what it's doing, Botox is simply paralyzing muscle tissue so it doesn't move. And that's why you have people that use a lot of Botox. They have no facial expressions. You know, their eyebrows go up and they're, you know, there nothing happens. There's no wrinkles. But it looks very artificial. It doesn't look natural. But also, people have to get their Botox about every 3 months because it wears off. And how does it wear off? It doesn't just go away. Your body's immune systems, through phagocytosis and other systems, will grab those and dissolve them. But that also means that your immune system that's fighting the Botox bacterium is not able at the same time to fight other local infections. So you're more likely to have arthritic pain or infections in your gums that are not subsiding, getting worse. And then you come in with a flu, which can kill you and does kill anywhere up from 30 to 80,000 people in the United States each year, including kids, unlike coronavirus. And so I said, he's with a, how come you have no wrinkles? I mean, you got the skin of a 20-year-old. And I said, simple. Vitamin C and quercetin, those two nutrients together create new collagen, and the collagen tightens. And as the collagen tightens, your skin then tightens in addition. It's relatively simple. Oh, he said. Yeah, a lot easier, a lot less expensive to take vitamin C and quercetin throughout the day because that's just one of the things it does. Quercetin helps if you've got bruising. It helps eliminate a lot of the bruises. Simple things that are not difficult, but we take for granted. So a lot of the answers we need for good health are right in front of us. For example, if you had a hard exercise and you want to reduce your soreness, just have yourself 2 tablespoons of tart cherry concentrate. What's in the tart cherry? These proanthocytidins go into your tissue and helps stop the pain. And curcumin does the same thing. So you see, there's a lot of things we can do that can help us overcome a lot of the processes of aging. And we're just not taking advantage of it. And we should. It's not difficult. So that's the latest on health and healing. And again, I like to share a little tidbit information. Just simple things, not complicated. Because we're always giving all the studies, as I did at the beginning, from the peer-reviewed literature, and it's common sense things as well. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go directly into a discussion. And this discussion is called racism, and it's been redefined. And Professor Brett Weinstein, who lost his job as the most, quote, liberal and loved professor at Evergreen College, and his students all defended him, the faculty defended him, but outside agitators came on and they said, he's a racist. Not a single thing in him is racist. He's anti-racist. But that's the new phenomena. The anti-racists are creating a whole new form of racism. Why? What is the motive behind all this? Where did this come from? It's one thing to have legitimate, and we all agree upon that, legitimate grievances that allow for change of any type of social or personal issue where people are victims and shouldn't be. But this is different. This has been weaponized and politicized. He's going to give us his input, but then I'm going to stop and interpret it and get into a lot of other different issues about divide and conquer, what's going on now, everywhere. And we know who the dividers are, but we've not yet identified the conquerors. We will. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Problem is that they have redefined the term racism. And in fact, if you listen to them, what they tell you will suggest that, of course, I automatically would be a racist by virtue of my skin color. In fact, it's an incurable condition.
To get Brexit. Make America great again.
No, no, no.
Hello, this is Stephen Edgington for The Sun, and today I'm interviewing Brett Weinstein. Brett Weinstein is a US academic, biologist, and evolutionary theorist. He's also part of what's called the intellectual dark web. We're going to be talking woke movement, Black Lives Matter, the US election, and evolutionary theory. Brett, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you're part of what's called the intellectual dark web, which is a really interesting bunch of intellectuals on YouTube and online. Can you explain how you joined that incident in Evergreen in 2017 that sort of brought you to mainstream providence? What happened?
Well, so one does not join the intellectual dark web. It's an informal designation that has been applied to me, to my wife, to Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, Joe Rogan, and quite a number of others. The term was coined by my brother, Eric Weinstein. The event that catalyzed public awareness of me was a meltdown at the college where I was teaching. I had been teaching there for 14 years. I was very popular with students. And in 2017, there was a set of proposals advancing through the college architecture that basically equity and diversity proposals that, as they were formulated, were a terrible threat to the college's ability to continue to function. And as a faculty member, it was my obligation to help govern the college. And I pointed out how dangerous these proposals were. And that caused me to be branded a racist. And some agitators at the school created a protest. 50 students who I had never met showed up at my class and demanded my firing or my resignation. The protests quickly descended into riots. The president of the college stood down the campus police force and allowed students to patrol with weapons in what they called community patrols, but what were really a bullying group that actually confronted other students. In one case, a student was battered. In other cases, students were intimidated. And these events were all filmed and uploaded to YouTube, which brought a tremendous amount of attention to the meltdown and to my role as the lightning rod at the center of it.
What happened to those students? Because it's an interesting question. Those students probably aren't stupid. I mean, all around the world, you've seen thousands of these, what I would call kind of woke, you know, far left activists rise up, especially in 2020. Over in the UK, there's a whole bunch of students from the Black Lives Matter protests at Oxford University, who some of which have said some of the most abhorrent things about white people. You know, they're basically Marxists. These people aren't idiots, but somehow they got to a point where they felt like shouting at you, someone who is a progressive, that you're racist. So how did they basically, in my view, become radicalized?
Well, there are two questions there. One is what happened to them after they did this, and the other is how did they get where they are? And I think the story of how they got where they are is similar everywhere. And that is to say, there are a small number of bad actors. There are another group of people who are confused by issues in the present moment. And the two things combine to create an attractive force. And what people don't seem to understand about this movement is that although what it declares, what it says it believes, is incredibly foolish, and what it proposes is incredibly dangerous, the strategy that causes it to spread is incredibly smart. And so by creating a dynamic in which anybody who expresses skepticism of the movement is targeted, it incentivizes people to adopt. And then once they have adopted it, those people rationalize these beliefs. So obviously wrongheaded ideas are spreading like wildfire because people are effectively afraid to acknowledge that they don't agree. And once they've failed to acknowledge it, the rest is done internally by a rationalization process. As for what happened to the students, that's an interesting story. The college pretended that they were disciplined, which is not the case. The college played a shell game where it took a lot of disciplinary matters that had nothing to do with the protests and riots and pretended that they had been responsive to them. One of the students, in fact, the ringleader of the movement, somebody who was involved not only in bullying fellow students and organizing the protest at my classroom, but somebody who actually kidnapped on videotape administrators of the college and arranged to have them held against their will, even to the point that the president of the college was unable to go to the bathroom on his own. He had to have an escort to make sure, I guess, that he didn't escape. But in any case, that student was hired the summer after the riots to help rewrite the student code of conduct. He was actually paid by the college to help write the rules for the rest of the student body, which tells you something about just how crazy this movement is and how far people who are trying to ingratiate.
Okay, let's stop there for a moment. two things that we have to understand by what he said. I'm looking at the larger worldview here, not just what happened to him. Who was held accountable? Nobody. But then pull the curtain back. Who was held accountable for giving us DDT, asbestos, genetically engineered Roundup ingredient, glyphosate? Now, these have actually killed people, caused their death and disease, have destroyed our environment, have created a monster in our industrial farming techniques, outside of paying some fines that didn't cost them. Business continued. They're still selling glyphosate. They're still selling Roundup. They're still promoting it. Now, they don't sell asbestos anymore, but they had 30 other chemicals equally as toxic as DDT take its place. Nobody suffered. Nobody suffered the consequences. We had a drug that killed a minimum of 60,000 people, and many believe it was upwards of 500,000 people. The company, Merck, knew that it was dangerous. The whistleblower, Dr. Graham, at the FDA, was silenced and threatened. We interviewed him down in Washington, D.C., went down there, and you hear him in the film. He says, yeah, I was threatened, and everything you could do to shut me up so this information from the FDA that's supposed to be protecting us didn't get out. So they went ahead for 4 years, and they sold, I believe it was around, I've heard figures of $12 million, I've heard figures of $18 million, $1 billion. And then they voluntarily stopped. The FDA did not insist that they take this deadly, killing drug off the market. In fact, more Americans died in 4 years from using this one drug, the selective serotonin reuptake, this pain reliever. It's a COX-2 inhibitor and Vioxx, than all the American casualties in the Vietnam War. No one was prosecuted. No one apologized. Everybody got a raise. The stock market said, good, this is behind us. You paid a fine, the cost of doing business, and went forward. Who was responsible? We know exactly who was responsible and how they did it and how they knew with malice aforethought that they were giving us something that could cause heart attacks and strokes. Nobody was held accountable. We have people promoting wood-powered renewable energy, including all over Vermont. Why wasn't Bernie Sanders out there protesting this? But he wasn't. And what about nuclear power? We've had the Clintons promoting nuclear power, but then again, one of their top advisors came from the nuclear industry. Barack Obama, David Axelrod, the nuclear industry. So they promote nuclear power as clean and safe. It's neither. It's not green either. We've done documentaries, Knocking on the Devil's Door. All those people got a pass. Clean coal. Remember Obama's clean coal? Well, there is no such thing as clean coal. It's like saying living dead. No, the person's dead. Well, we want to make them living again, but they're dead. There is no such thing as clean coal, but Obama promoted it. No consequences. Gas hydrofracking. It's safe. Its chemicals won't impact the air or water. No, all the science shows that it's adverse to the animals, the air, and the water. It pollutes everything, and it's not even economically feasible. They're going bankrupt. Nobody held accountable. Geoengineering. Nobody held accountable. Agent Orange, nobody held accountable. So you see, all these are just examples of how people can be found to be guilty. The tobacco industry, the sugar industry, Coca-Cola for sponsoring a study to downplay the role of sugar in their drinks causing health problems and try to blame it on fat. Synthetic hormone replacement therapy, it caused upwards of 13% of 10 million women, that's 1.3 million women using it per year, to have heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. Six major conditions. It took almost 25 years before warnings were placed. It's still being given. Who was held accountable? Nobody. The human papillomavirus, the most deadly virus, a vaccine, I should say, out there. And it doesn't reduce cervical cancer. It was all mathematical model. They've made billions of dollars. They've made it mandatory. So they took something that should never have been given to any human being on Earth, and now they've made it mandatory. Psychiatric drugs, the SSRIs, Paxil, Prozac, Effexor, all of these, Zoloft, these are deadly. Nothing. AZT for the first 5 years at very high doses, seeing people who were HIV infected but otherwise had no symptoms, asymptomatic, take it at 1,600 milligrams and die. Nothing done to Burroughs Wellcome, nor the gay organizations like ACT UP that were sponsoring this and promoting it. Electroshock therapy, fluoridation of our water, 5G, and all of the safety concerns about electromagnetic frequencies and mobile phone use, billions of people put at risk. There is no such thing as responsibility any longer if you're a powerful corporation. Mammography, the polio vaccine contaminated with SV40 virus, 100 million Americans were infected. Mercury and Malcolm fillings. So you see thalidomide, the Tuskegee experiment, who went to jail because of intentionally infecting what would have been hundreds of thousands exponentially over 40 plus years of people who had syphilis that could have been easily treated and cured, and instead they were not cured, they were not treated, they were given sham drugs so that they could spread it. So people at the racist institution, Center for Disease Control, they could say, oh, we're doing an interesting study. Who said it was a good study to do, using African Americans as human guinea pigs? Who was held accountable? Nobody. Who went to jail? Nobody. All the people lied at Simpsonwood when they knew that the thimerosal, the mercury, in vaccines was causing an increase from the MMR vaccine specifically, in autism rates. They covered it up. Who went to jail for obstruction of justice? There, the World Health Organization was there. All the vaccine makers were there. The CDC and the FDA were all there. They excluded the public. They wanted no taping, recordings, nothing. It was a secret conference. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. found through Freedom of Information. One person had recorded it. We played the recording of those people wanting to get out of there. One doctor in particular said, my daughter's having a baby, and I got to make sure that they don't give her the MMR vaccine. So his granddaughter, her life is of value. But what about everyone else's life? No. And what about the fact that the CDC continued its institutional and systemic racism when it allowed well north of 100,000 young black boys up to the age 36 months of age to have upwards of a 300% increase in autism from the mercury in the MMR vaccine? And Dr. Thompson at the CDC oversaw that, and all the other people who had testified and lied before Congress, there was no association. They were part of that, and they hid it. Thompson's on record. He's now an official whistleblower still working at the CDC. Was he held accountable? Was the head of the CDC, Gerberding, at the time held accountable? No one was held accountable for any of these. So you see, when you talk about do we hold people accountable, the answer is not if you're rich, not if you're power, and certainly not if you're associated with the deep state or the oligarchs who have a lot of control in it. So why would you expect someone associated with a demonstration, associated with violence, associated with looting, to be held accountable when all the other things that impact people worldwide? Was Obama and Hillary Clinton held accountable for the lies about Libya being a threat and destroying the entire country, a peaceful country that was not only not a threat, it was the number one advanced country of the 54 countries in Africa. It was number one, number longest lifespan, greatest education, greatest human-made reservoir providing water for tens of millions of Africans in other nations, of no debt, of everyone sharing in the profits, high standard of living, everyone educated, free medical care. And he's never once been held accountable by any of the journalists in the world, not one. So when he's talking about, well, who was held accountable for what happened at Evergreen, take a look at the world around you. Which banker was held accountable for dealing in derivatives or credit default swaps or putting their positions where they were at great risk and were far exceeding in what they were loaning versus what their cash reserves were in case there was a crisis? And yet those are the very people who were bailed out first, given more money than what they actually lost so they could buy up their competitors. Everything about our system is broken. Everything. And it's all been politicized. Let's continue back with what he's saying.
stay in its good graces.
And what happened to you? I know that you spoke in front of Congress after this incident and you launched a lawsuit against the college. Can you talk about the impact it's had on your academic career in the last 3 years?
Well, that's an interesting question. I did testify in front of Congress, and the events brought a great deal of attention to me. So I have started a podcast, the Dark Horse Podcast, which is quite successful, and I've been invited to speak all over the world. The academic part of my life has been severely interrupted. In fact, most colleges would have very little to do with me because they are, of course, concerned that the stigmas that were leveled at me will be leveled at them. The one exception has been Princeton University, where the James Madison program has brought me and my wife on as visiting fellows. So we're very grateful to them for their courage.
You, as a progressive, are not a Trump supporter. You said consistently throughout your career that you're a very progressive person, yet these students at your university were calling you a racist. Do you think they actually believed that you are a racist? What's their motivation behind calling you that, one of the worst terms you could call anyone?
The problem is that they have redefined the term racism. And in fact, if you listen to them, what they tell you will suggest that, of course, I automatically would be a racist by virtue of my skin color. In fact, it's an incurable condition, which does raise the question about why they're so intent on engaging in these mental retraining exercises. If it is, in fact, futile to fight white supremacy because it is ingrained in every white person's mind, then putting people through trainings is unlikely to function. But if we put that aside, let's just simply recognize that their definition of the term involves both speech and silence being violence. And in that circumstance, there's just simply no way to win. They've defined the rules of the game that way.
In those last 3 years, what has changed on the university campuses? Have things got better? Have things got worse? And especially when we look at 2020 with the Black Lives Matter protests, the US election, coronavirus, has that just accelerated all of this kind of woke movement?
Yes, in fact, the phenomenon that we saw at Evergreen has now spilled over into virtually every institution in the United States and is spreading even outside of our borders. This madness, in almost exactly the same form that we saw it at Evergreen, is taking over governance, it is taking over corporations, and it's a very dangerous phenomenon. As I warned Congress, it would be. It was inevitable that if we trained college students to believe these things, that as they moved into the world, eventually they would unleash these views and they would topple these institutions. And now that's what we're seeing.
Academics like yourself like to talk about things, you know, identity politics. And you just mentioned there in quite vague terms that the ideas that these students believe. Can we be very specific in saying what actually are these ideas? What are the ideas of the woke movement? What is identity politics? Can we try and define that to understand the things that students believe and are being taught?
The first thing you have to understand is that belief means different things to different people. And for me, as a scientist, belief is a conclusion that I reach based on the evidence I see. And if the evidence changes, the belief will follow. But emerging out of critical race theory, these protesters believe that all there is power, and that these claims are simply effective or not effective at garnering power and resources. So to say that they believe them is a bit of an error. What they do is wield them. And to the extent that in wielding these ideas, institutions bend the knee, that tells them that these ideas are correct. Really what it means is that the ideas are effective at changing people's behavior. But the two are not synonymous. So what do they believe? It really depends. If you're talking about the academics who are at the core of critical race theory, Well, they believe in an aggressive version of postmodernism, and they believe in Marxism. If you're talking about the rank and file who are showing up on the street and attacking buildings and neighborhoods, they may not believe in critical race theory. In fact, they may barely have heard of it. What they believe is that something is very wrong and that the solution to it involves tearing down all of the structure.
Essentially, they believe, I mean, I think that the whole Black Lives Matter issue, in a way, can be boiled down into one belief, and that is that we live in an institutionally or systemically racist society. How do you respond to that accusation?
It's complex, because I do believe that there are serious, long-standing race issues, but I also believe that they don't function in the way that this movement is telling us they do. The anarchism at the heart of this movement, the belief that by tearing down this broken structure, that a better one will emerge in its place, is simply nonsense. Even for those who are the victims of racism, the functioning of society is important. And the correct thing to do is to fix what's wrong rather than tear it down in the hopes that a better system will emerge. That kind of utopianism is going to result in an absolute disaster across the West.
I want to talk about that absolute disaster in the second half of the interview I read on your website.
Okay, there is a very famous Vietnamese monk, and his name was Thich Hanh, H-A-N-H. He said that impermanence and selflessness are not negative aspects of life, but the very foundation on which life is built. Impermanence is the constant transformation of things. Without impermanence, there can be no life. Selflessness is the interdependent nature of all things. Without interdependence, nothing could exist. I mean, right now, the people who are not aware of what it is to be a farmer are going to be eating that farmer's food later today to give them sustenance and allow them to live another day. But will they show appreciation for what that farmer had to do? That's a very selfless and high sacrifice career. There's joy, there's suffering. You're always hoping that this is the year that you don't get the floods or drought. But you live with a constant awareness that everything changes. Whatever happened last year may not happen, may happen in reverse this year. It's much like looking in the mirror only once a year and then suddenly seeing the impermanence of your body. Or looking to how you thought and how you communicated when you were younger and thinking of things you said that you shouldn't have. It came from impulse or came from negativity or pure raw emotions having to express itself or conditioned responses. Well, that divides us. It divides us from the outcome that we feel we need and engaged in self-defeating habits. So the impermanence of life, the impermanence of things that we had one time valued, and how our friends die, our family members die, the older ones first, our pets die, and then we start to see the changes. And then the older we get, the more impermanence manifests itself. And frequently that's a time when people do one of two things. Either they become resolved to the first thing they do is read the obituaries, or they talk to people how such and such, and then they express how they feel. Well, I've got the arthritis, I've got this, that, and the other. Or they realize, I'd better pay attention to the meaning of this 24 hours because I can't live this 24 hours again. I'm on a clock here. And sooner or later, that time will stop. So why not give value to the moment we're in? And how about a part of that moment of giving appreciation is also to see I'm interconnected with other people as a senior citizen. Could I then help someone who's younger better understand the crisis before it happens to them so they can be better prepared for the transitions that occur when a crisis occurs? We either break down or we break through. Some people's crisis allows them to break through. Harry Beale, he and I were featured in a story in the New York Times Magazine section, very nice story, and he had broken down. I'd never met him, didn't hear about him, but someone called on his behalf. And he was at the end of his life. He was a big supporter of Israeli philanthropic efforts. And He had lived a very ethical life, in his opinion, but not a healthy one. He smoked, he had end-stage emphysema, arthritis, heart disease, he had everything. He was lucky even to be alive. And I remember in our first conversation, I said, Harry, what is it you're seeking? He said, I can't breathe, I'm in constant pain, you know, I can't walk. I said, that's all you want? He said, is that all? He said, I'd love to have that. I haven't had that in years. I said, what could you do if you could start a part of your life over? He said, well, that's nonsense. I'm at the end of my life. I accept that. I'm not afraid of death. You know, I just accept it. I said, but what if we could give you more time and without the pain and healthy? He didn't believe it was possible. So 3 months went by and he got even worse. Then he calls me and I said, well, I'm on my way down to Texas. So if you want help, come on down. And he did. And he struggled, and he argued, and he resisted until one day I went out in the morning, and there he is. He's on the track, at a quarter mile track I built. And he had bloody knees. And I said, Harry, what happened? He said, well, he said, I'll survive it. I've been through worse. He said, I tripped. And I said, okay, what did you learn from the trip? He said, I shouldn't have gone out so fast. I got to go slow, as you said. Go slow, get my balance, get my breathing. The fast part will come later. And so it showed me patience. Okay, fine. We'll heal the knees up, no problem. Well, after being down there for over a month, he was a different human being. Overcame his emphysema, his heart disease, his arthritis, his depression, all these things that he thought were not capable of changing, we changed. And he would go on to live many more years in outstanding health. So first you come to awareness of how impermanent things are. And then we ask, what in the larger interconnectivity of our society is permanent and what must change? Well, when institutions, as Brett just mentioned, when institutions no longer serve the purpose they originally were meant to serve, they have to change, which means that all institutions should be considered no longer permanent. Because when you're permanent and you're part of a permanent fixture, a technocrat, a bureaucrat, a politician, then you're protected. You don't have to alter anything. It becomes a power to itself. And as he said, it's all about power. So what if we began to take the power away from institutions? What if we took the power away from the CIA? And instead of the CIA, we had a new agency. And the only people hired for that agency had to show that they were advocates of peace and prosperity. Peace and prosperity, Occupy Peace and Prosperity. Where's that come from? Gerald Salante invented that, and Ralph Nader, and Thurgeson and Cindy Sheehan, we were there to celebrate with 1,400 people came up to Kingston that day to launch that. It was a wonderful day. Imagine if you had an agency that would go in and try to help heal by forgiveness and rebuilding the countries, go into Cambodia and Vietnam and get rid of all the landmines as a national Marshall Program so 10,000 kids a year don't have their legs blown off. Imagine if we helped stabilize currencies. And what if we got rid of exploitation by hedge funds and equity partners, their land? What if we brought that interconnectivity that Hom was talking about? We're all interconnected and we're all impermanent. So why not, while we're in this moment, help those who need help in a peaceful way? Why not have diplomats for peace and prosperity instead of people that are just part of the neoliberal agenda, which is the only reality that the Clintons, Obamas, Bushes, Reagans, no, the entirety of the Washington establishment, which is a permanent, corrupt, evil establishment, should change. Can it be reformed? No, it's not possible. Therefore, I would suggest that we withdraw our support from it, boycott it, until such time that it no longer exists and has to change. And who is behind this? The people who are not being boycotted, and there's no demonstration in front of Elon Musk and George Soros and Bill Gates' mansions. That's where we have to put our energy, to show them, we know who you are. We know that you are not a part of the interdependence, the selflessness, the sacrifice of anything in life. And therefore, you are the problem. Richard Gale is in studio. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Gary.
Give us your perspective on this. Yes, I can hear you. Give us your perspective on this.
Well, I think for certain that we're going to be finding the everything's reached an impasse right now in economics and finances, globalization, our social institutions, just the conflict and division over values and tribes. So all of this is going to reach a head where there will have to be fundamental changes to take place if we even to survive. And I think humanity and people and different, you know, different nations and different continents, they'll take on this challenge and to challenge the powers that be. They'll do it each in their own way, which is the way it would have to be done. There could not be any kind of one single uniform strategic plan to do this. It's going to happen at the local levels and at the national levels. So I think we're reaching a time when all this stuff will change. What it will be replaced with, who knows? You know, I mean, that's always the tricky one. But you know, as Vedana Shiva said in one of our documentaries, it's in the ruins that the new seeds are found. So the new seeds don't come after the collapse. The new seeds are actually born within the process of the collapse. So I think we're witnessing that now.
And, Richard, and what
even though I don't agree with so much of all this kind of reverse racism and stuff and woke culture and all, but I also see it as part of that process too. Even if it is destructive, but it's destructive in its own way of destroying other institutions too that need to be destroyed. So, but it's at a higher level, it's still all delusional. So,
what do you think about the effort now to divide and conquer? We're not paying attention. What would be the top 10 issues in America today that we're not looking at? We're looking instead of everyone being a racist, if you're deemed a racist, and not getting to do collectively anything that actually rebuilds something, protects something, like the environment, the sanctity of life, to help with the issues that are completely neglected altogether, because they've got everyone fighting each other over foolish notions with gross generalizations. What would be the 10 things that you say we better pay attention to, because if we don't, we're running out of time?
Well, I think there's only one fundamental issue. And I think that one fundamental issue is the fact that we don't know ourselves. We really, really, truly do not know ourselves. We don't know our minds. We don't know. I mean, think about it. The mind is something that occupies ourselves. It's the most intimate, one of the most intimate qualities. Our conscious awareness and our minds are probably the most intimate things that we possess. And yet it's what we know least about. We know more about the Big Bang, or we know more about viruses or DNA molecule than we do about our own minds and our own state of consciousness. And so because of this ignorance, and it's a gross ignorance, because we have been so accustomed and habituated to just try to find meaning outside of ourselves, that we've completely lost that interconnection with discovering meaning within. And so until that, there's some kind of a revolution that occurs in that world. I don't, other issues are just, they'll just continue to go with the ebb and flow. Something else will break down, but something just as bad or not quite as bad will replace it. So I put it really back to our lack of understanding ourselves and our own minds. And that kind of goes to certain universal values that we've lost touch of. But simply to say, okay, we should be more compassionate, or we should have more loving kindness, or that we should express more equanimity in our lives or empathy, that's all well and good, but these are qualities that need to be cultivated. Virtue is something that we cultivate. If we really want genuine well-being or genuine happiness, that has to be cultivated. That doesn't come automatically just because we wish it or we want it. And to have any kind of a real deeper understanding of what's happening around us and within ourselves, or what we want to call wisdom, that has to be cultivated. it doesn't come by reading books or even listening to radio broadcasts. You know, it comes from, it's based on a deep, direct, experiential insight into the nature of ourselves. So we can speak about needing freedom and wanting our freedom from things, but it's a faux freedom, or it's a faux compassion. It's a faux kindness. It's a faux empathy. It's a faux equanimity.
It's a shortcut. We're out of time, Richard, but you've made some very important points here, and we appreciate it. What it means is we've spent the last 40 years in shortcuts to everything. Shortcuts to mastering life, shortcuts to empathy, shortcuts to change. You know, we talk about it, we just don't actualize it. Thank you very much, Richard.
Okay.
And thank you all for listening. And by the way, if you're interested in getting a free copy every week of the PRN newsletter, go to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com, if you'd like to sign up for the free newsletter. Have a nice day, everyone.